Sarah C.
And I'm Sarah D. You're listening to the Art Attack Podcast.
Each episode, we tackle a new work of art in Washington, D.C.
We hope our podcast encourages you to look at art in a new way.
When it comes to art, we're serious.
As an art attack. We're standing in front of a piece called Black Girl Dragging White Girl by an artist named Kim Dingall. This piece is from 1992. It's oil and charcoal on canvas, and it's at the Corcoran Gallery of Art.
So it's a pretty large painting, too. The canvas is at least 5 foot tall, maybe 3 or 4 feet wide. And it's these two figures of a black girl and a white girl. And they're the black girl standing over the white girl, dragging her, is what the label says. But she also looks like maybe she's helping her up or something. And they're wearing these really frilly little party dresses. And the black girl has little Mary Janes on. But beyond that, there's something sort of not quite right with everything.
The white girl appears to be, like, unconscious, and her limbs are just, like, flailing out and totally limp, and she's got her dress is, like, dragged up above her waist so you can see her white underwear.
The black girl has this very stoic expression. She's just sort of looking off in the distance. She doesn't look like she's straining or that the white girl's heavy, although clearly she looks like she's gone sort of ragdoll limp. It's very strange, the relationship that they have. And we should also mention about the background.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the background is just brown. I mean, or, you know, ecru or tan. And there's no context for what's happening at all. There's just really no setting. It's just a flat brown. And you can see these sort of sketchy charcoal lines where it looks like maybe Dingle had, you know, sketched out where the black girl would be, but then moved the arm. So you can see the process of this piece being made, but she didn't go back and take those lines out. She just left them in. The palette is very muted and limited. It's white, brown, and black.
And the dress is the sort of big brushstrokes that hint at almost impressionistically sort of frilly and fluffy white dresses.
And parts of it are more finished, but then parts of it are really still very sketchy and unfinished, like the hands in particular of the black girl are only vaguely hinting at hands, but they're super sketchy, and then you can still see canvas coming through at parts.
And one of the most interesting things is how the proportions are all off. The black girl's legs look too long. The white girl's arms look way too long. She looks like an orangutan. Everything just seems not quite... Like, if that white girl stood up, she'd be, like, 7 feet tall. Yeah. It's just... It's a very bizarre situation.
Mm-hmm. So then moving into references... what was your first reference?
My first reference was just sort of dolls come to life. I think of the American Girl dolls and, like, the frilly party dresses. That's the first thing I think of, that these... Especially because they're so, like, lumbersome.
Mine is Degas in a kind of weird way. I think maybe it's just because they're wearing dresses. I don't know. Like, in the way that the dresses are treated and the fabric. But it does, like, they look kind of like tutus a little bit.
Yeah. My last reference was to Mannerist painting, which in just immediately after the Renaissance, the Mannerist style was very elongated. Proportions were not quite right. There's, the famous one is the Madonna of the Long Neck, where she's got this really, like, extra long sort of swan neck. And the fact that they're in this pyramid composition, it has a very sort of Mannerist type of analogy for me, anyway.
And my last one is Henry Darger, who was this weird sort of recluse artist who lived in Chicago, I think in, like, the 50s, but he had created this book and this whole series of paintings in which these children princesses waged barbaric warfare on each other. And I think Kim Dingle has this whole series of these girls where they sort of rampage and commit violence against each other and just, like, you know, but not with any kind of bloodshed or anything. Like, the weird dynamic that's happening here. So, yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the Darger. Sort of thematically, it's very similar and a little somewhat stylistically similar.
That just, like, creeps me out. I don't know. I'm like, So those are our references. So one of the things that I think is why we wanted to talk about this piece is just because there's so much ambiguity going on. It's impossible to tell where they are, how they got in this situation. Do they know each other? Like, there's a million questions that are raised by this, and it's none of them are answered.
Sure. Right. Well, and it strongly hints at some sort of narrative, but it just leaves a lot in the hands, in the mind of the viewer, yeah. I think, to sort of fill in all the gaps about, like, what do we think is happening. The fact that there's really no context at all to help you out here, there's no, there's just, she's not giving you anything. And I think allowing it to be a little bit of, like, a Rorschach test in a way, like, how do you interpret this scene can say a lot about a lot of different issues from, you know, race, but also issues of gender and age, youth, all kinds of things.
Do you see them as friends helping each other? Do you see the black girl has hurt the white girl, now she's trying to drag her away? And I think you could start out thinking one thing, and then the more you think about it or look at maybe their expressions, your idea might change. She uses the verb drag, which I feel like has a very specific connotation. It's not helping, it's not lifting, but that's the only clue maybe that something here is not quite right, you know?
My interpretation sort of shifts to more of, like, the black girl is being so encumbered by this lumbering, big, like, white girl that she has to drag around. So that's, like, another way to flip it around.
Yeah, which is interesting because, like, even though there's no sense of musculature or, you know, anything, like, you could tell she's heavy. Mm-hmm. There's just something about the lugubriousness of her arms and legs and stuff that, like, she's clearly just a pain in the ass to schlep around. Mm-hmm. And certainly in Kim Dingle's work, she's done a lot of paintings that deal with women and girls in very masculine roles, very aggressive, you know, beating each other up and that sort of thing. So this isn't from that particular series, but I think it does echo and reference that idea of they're not engaged in quote-unquote feminine behavior.
Although you do still have, like, this visible underwear with the girl. It almost seems like she's been assaulted or something. Like, you just feel like something really bad just happened.
It puts you at ill ease, I think this painting does, at least for me anyway.
I think one of the things that she's asking us to think about in this painting, it has to do with, like, as you said, gender roles and femininity and sort of girlhood and our expectations of that.
I think race, femininity, gender, I think it's all sort of connected somehow in this. But then the question is, how? Like, I don't think that there's a clear answer. I don't think she gives you... She presents the scenario, but I don't think she's telling you how she wants you to feel one way or the other, mm-hmm. or whatever her feelings or intentions are. It's not being immediately manifested.
Takeaways? Yeah, my takeaway still is the idea of that sort of the Rorschach thing and how your perception of this painting changes as you look at it. And if you allow yourself to just, you know, stand here and not really favor one interpretation over another, but sort of like run through different interpretations and how your expectations kind of flavor how you view this, and how societal expectations flavor how you view this.
And also sort of like the idea that you bring to bear your own conceptions of, if you're already predisposed or pre-inclined to think one way, you know, about race or gender, then your baggage starts to come out in how you interpret a painting. My takeaway is that it's sort of a recurring theme on the podcast, but that there's no right or wrong answer, that we can look at something like this, and I think this clearly sort of embodies that idea that there's any interpretation could be a right interpretation, that you and I and 18 different people could walk up and have totally different ideas about what this means, and all of those could be right, and that's okay.
Actually, it would be like a good writing exercise to have, you know, come up and say, like, what's the story behind this? You could come up with a lot of stuff.
A million things. You could, yeah, they'd be a Rorschach. They'd be either, like, your twisted brain or your, you know, they're helping each other. Like, yeah. So I'm not going to tell you what I think that happened. I'm going to leave that in suspense. You can guess. You can write into the podcast and ask us what we...
That would be interesting. Yeah. Submit via comment what you think is happening in this painting.
Yes. Listener participation.
Next time on The Art Attack.
Jean Lafarge and Louis Comfort Tiffany were basically sort of like the Steve Jobs and Bill Gates of the Gilded Age.
The cutthroat stained glass market of 1885. Check theartattack.wordpress.com for our new episodes and postings, or subscribe on iTunes to The Art Attack Podcast.